keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive on mic. Just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling in flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in and welcome back. If you missed our show on Wednesday, it was an awesome show. We had some spoken word. Then our friend, Lou Calgiovanni came on and talked about Bernie Sanders. I know a lot of people listening probably like Bernie Sanders. Of course, my position remains neutral. I'm not going for any political candidate because I don't believe in political candidates. Anyway, if you are interested in Bernie Sanders, make sure you go back and check out our show from last week. It was, to say the least, it was interesting. And we had a good little debate and some awesome poetry, some anti-establishment poetry. And it's really cool to, you know, have some artists out there that are supporting the message as well, because you know we can't do it all through just posting articles or videos and stuff. I mean, the cultural revolution has to take place through, you know, everything that is part of our culture, which includes music and, you know, poetry and art and stuff like that. We've been having a lot of art shows here in San Diego recently that are very much in, you know, that line up with the activist movement, and it's been really successful. It's a good way to raise funds. It's a good way to organize people, and you know, it's a good way to do a lot of different things. I'm also joined in the studio tonight by our special guest, Jake Anderson. How are you doing?
Luke Skywalker. You can call me Luke Skywalker.
I was gonna call you Luke Skywalker, yeah. But Jake Anderson's a little better, I think.
I'm good, man. Good to be back. Spent some time in Albuquerque with my folks, and I missed your shows, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we missed having you here, man, and because it's always nice to have someone in the studio to join this conversation. And Manny hasn't been calling in either. I don't know. He's been busy.
Manny, where are you, Manny?
Manny, if you're out there, feel free to call us tonight, Manny.
Manny!
I saw him in San Diego not too long ago. He gave a rousing speech at the March Against Monsanto.
Oh, really?
Man, he brought people to tears.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, he worked in the he was a migrant worker. He worked in the fields a long time ago before there were any of these protections and stuff. And of course, they're still fighting for that stuff today. But, you know, we're talking about, you know, a guy that was in the fields working when they were flying over top spraying Roundup and shit like that on them. Anyway, yeah, hopefully he calls in tonight. And if not, we'll see him soon, I'm sure. If anybody wants to join the conversation tonight, hopefully you're not a troll. Last week we had a bunch of trolls calling in, and, you know, it's always entertaining, but it can derail the conversation sometimes. If you want to call in and join the show, feel free to join us, 718-717-8296. So I guess the first story I want to talk about, and Jake, I know you've got some interesting perspective on this, but everybody's favorite Republican announced that he's officially running for office today, Jeb Bush.
Never heard of him.
So Jeb Bush announced that he's running today, and the first thing, me and Jake were sitting here, and the first thing we said, well, dude, we got to write an article about how Jeb and Hillary are identical, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're different in some ways on civil liberty issues. You know, Hillary, I think, has a better track record on civil liberty issues, you know, particularly protections for, you know, gays and lesbians and, you know, things like that, and, you know, pro-choice, which, you know, I'm a supporter of. But unfortunately, when it comes to corporate donors, both of them are kind of being bankrolled by some pretty bad names. I mean, Hillary, for example, I mean, being from Arkansas myself, I can tell you that, you know, she was on the board of Walmart for many years and has been an apologist for their horrible labor practices for years. And she, her chief of staff on her campaign works for Monsanto. So we kind of know where she's going to stand on a bunch of important issues.
Don't forget Benghazi.
Yeah, and of course you got Benghazi, man. And then, you know, there was Jeb Bush doesn't have as much of a record because he wasn't in the Senate like Hillary was, you know, and he was governor of Florida and stuff. So he doesn't have as much of a national record that we can tear apart as Hillary does. We do know that Jeb is a warmonger. He's already come out on record and said that even knowing what he knows now, he still would have gone into Iraq, even though it was all based on lies and bullshit.
Good Lord.
So, you know, there's that. And then,
well, Saddam put out a hit on George, on his father. That was the personal vendetta side that a lot of people don't know about, and really probably the primary reason we went in there.
Definitely, I don't doubt that. I mean, of course, you have the geopolitics and the oil and all that stuff, and the military-industrial complex always wants to make its extra bucks and all that stuff. So yeah, man, it's going to become a race to the bottom between Hillary and Jeb. And, you know, once again, I'll state my position. I think it's going to be Marco Rubio that's going to end up winning because these guys like Jeb and Lindsey Graham are going to make everyone else look like lunatics. And, you know, Marco Rubio is going to fall in the middle and be like, hey, I'm a moderate. I only want to bomb 8 countries, not 12. And so that's what I'm worried about. And that's probably what's going to happen. I don't think there's any chance in hell that Jeb Bush is going to become president, just as much as I think that Hillary Clinton won't become president. Jeb, he carries his family name. You know, the Bush name is just a shit name. It's political suicide. You know, to be named after Bush, it's political suicide. Because both presidents that have already been have been complete shit, and they've done horrible things. And father and son, and now, you know, the other son and the brother, they're all pretty much cut from the same cloth. You know, and we all know that Grandpappy Bush helped the Nazis and stuff back in the day and all that.
That's
and,
documented.
You know, they've been coming from this long line of fascist tendencies, and, you know, this guy's not going to be any different.
Part of me almost wants Jeb Bush to get elected just to fast-track the train wreck, you know, just, like, push us further towards, you know, whatever event is necessary in order to get people to wake up, you know? But then the other side of me is like, I think I would seriously have a nervous breakdown if another Bush was elected president.
DB, what do you think about that?
I think you're right, Nick. We've been talking about that for a while, and the dark horse candidacy, just like Obama kind of came out of nowhere, I think the same thing with Rubio.
So as to the point that Jake was saying, man, and, you know, I've been a guy that's, you know, against these horrible politicians like Hillary and Jeb and Marco Rubio and, you know, all these guys. But as much as I'd hate to see these guys win, you know, there is a part of me that identifies with what Jake was saying, where it's like, look, if we could actually get Bush or Hillary into office, I mean, wouldn't that wake more people up? You know, wouldn't more people be like, holy shit, why is this country turning into a monarchy? Why are these same families still running the show all these years later?
I don't think Hillary would have the effect that you want with that, because Democrats have the Democratic Party has a way more populist kind of propaganda machine that makes them seem...
Yeah, they make the wars look cool.
Right, for lack of a better word, yeah.
I remember there was this meme that came out when right after the Snowden stuff first broke, and it was a picture where they put some of those clear glasses on George Bush, you know, those hipster sunglasses? And they're like, hipster George Bush spying on people before it was cool. And yeah, you're right, man. I mean, Obama definitely has a way with making his foreign policy look less evil Mm-hmm. And his spying. I mean, if Snowden had leaked those files during the Bush administration, dude, it would have been a way bigger of a shitstorm. You know, but because it's under Obama, it's more contained. You got to keep in mind a lot of the media, you know, New York Times, CBS, MSNBC, NBC, all these guys, they do have a deep roots in the Democratic Party. I mean, I don't know if you saw the article, but I mean, there's like a bunch of, I don't know what you want to call it. I don't know if it's inbreeding or what, between the Obama administration and a lot of these media companies, where you got, you know, people that are married in, you know, people in the Obama administration that are married to executives in media. Oh, I'm sure you're familiar with Dana Bash. She's the CNN reporter, and her husband is in the Obama administration and stuff. And so you got these incestual kind of ties that run deep. And so the Democrats kind of get away with more shit. But of course, you got Fox News in the other corner, and they're the heavyweight. I was looking at some stats from Drudge today, and they drive like 700 million views a month through Drudge. And Drudge is a very right-leaning, conservative type mm-hmm. of website. So between Drudge and Fox, that kind of counterbalances between the CBS and all these other, you know, horrible mainstream media websites. But they definitely just shill for one side or the other. They never give any play to the people that are in the middle ground. And so you'll see that kind of stuff play out with Bernie Sanders, Rand Paul, and then those are the two anti-establishment kind of mainstream people. And then the third party candidates, does anybody even know who they are? They don't get any media play. I know Gary Johnson's running again. I know Jill Stein is running again. Does anybody else know that? Hardly, because the media just won't talk about that stuff. They're going to cram down Jeb Bush. They're going to cram down Hillary Clinton. And then in the end, they're going to slide through with Marco Rubio. And it's like, oh, he won, and he's awesome, and he identifies with Hispanic people and stuff. And it's like, yeah, identify with Hispanic people all you want. But what he's going to do is, all he's going to do is continue the policies that Bush, you know, was doing since the year 2000, that Obama continued when he took over. And now Rubio is just going to carry that torch. And as DB was saying, he is the dark horse. He's going to come out of nowhere, and it's going to be like, all of a sudden, it's going to be this guy. It's not going to be as obvious as Mitt Romney. Now, Mitt Romney was playing the exact same role that Hillary Clinton is going to play in this election, is where, you know, Mitt Romney ran against Obama with the intent to lose. Man, that guy had no chance in hell of winning. Everybody knew that. But the whole entire time, he was being sold as, oh, he's the most electable candidate, he's the moderate. But he couldn't even get conservatives excited for him because he was a Mormon. And the right. conservatives were like, oh, we're not going to vote for some Mormon guy and shit. So, I mean, this guy, Mitt Romney, was predetermined to lose. If you go back and look at the Republican debates from 2012, you'll see that Mitt Romney had the highest average amount of face time in all of the debates. Mm-hmm. He got the most amount of time to speak and the most amount of time to convince people of his platform. And he couldn't convince anyone.
Well, he has that strong jaw. You know, it's just it's appealing.
Like the Ken Barbie. Yeah. But you know, this is the same exact candidacy that I think we're going to see from Hillary Clinton. You know, this is a candidate that everybody knows. Anybody that has common sense knows that Hillary Clinton is not going to win. She's got more baggage than anybody ever. You know what I mean? Like it's almost as if she's got more baggage than any candidate that's ever existed. And this whole thing with Benghazi, that's a sticking point. This whole thing with Libya, there was just news out today that the U.S. bombed out some Al-Qaeda leader in Yemen or in Libya. It's like, I thought we liberated Libya in 2011. Why are we still bombing that country? And you don't hear anything about that until they supposedly hit an Al-Qaeda leader. And they come out and like, hey, we got this Al-Qaeda guy in Libya. And then the Libyan government says, not so fast. I don't think we got him, actually. This guy, they've claimed they killed this guy already like five times, and he keeps resurfacing. And it's almost...
Maybe he's a cat.
It's almost comical when you sit there and look, and it's like, oh, shit, we're aligning with Al-Qaeda over in Syria, and we're hoping, you know, we're basically indirectly funding them and fueling their movement in Syria to go topple Assad. And now we're bombing out, we're trying to hit their leaders out in Libya. And it's as if these guys never learn anything, you know. Like every time you bomb a head of a terror organization, that just makes that organization harder to stop because it splinters. You take out the head, the organization splinters off into a bunch of splinter cells, and then it's just harder and harder to take these guys out.
Well, Nick, that's exactly what they want.
I mean, it would almost seem that way, and that's the same exact tactic they've been using in Mexico against the war on drugs. You know, they go and they take out the kingpin, the drug kingpin, then the cartel splits. And then instead of having one big cartel, you got two small ones. You know, and then then a bunch of people get caught in the crossfire, the turf wars and all that stuff. That same exact thing that is happening in the Middle East, it's happening in Mexico. It seems to be happening every country that we intervene in their domestic affairs.
Chaos and terror breed insecurity. Who can provide the security to help that? Government.
And it's really our only industry at this point.
That's our best export is
we export poverty.
Poverty and guns. We got we're the biggest exporter in guns anywhere. So yeah, man. So this Jeb thing, I know I doubt anybody listening to the show right now is fooled by this Jeb shit. I like to just make fun of him. We're gonna have a hard hitting article out on Jeb and Hillary coming soon, right, Jake?
Yeah, I got my mind working, spinning.
So yeah, this is keep an eye out for that. The Jeb Hillary article, because we're going to try to tear them both to shreds in one foul swoop, and then we'll be able to keep reusing that article as long as both of them are still in the race. So we'll be able to pound that one into the ground, and hopefully it'll make Jeb and Hillary look like shit. Either way, like I was saying, Hillary's going to be propped up as the candidate.
I want to help. I am an ostensible Bernie Sanders supporter. So that's where my allegiances fall. Just so you know, Nick, I just want you to know that.
Yeah, man, but unfortunately Bernie Sanders is going to be the Ron Paul of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
Don't get me wrong. Ron Paul had some, he created a movement and stuff, and I think that's what is going to happen with Bernie Sanders.
But the biggest difference between him and Paul is, Paul's philosophy and ideology really only works in a place like Texas. And Bernie Sanders has widespread appeal, especially among the younger people I talk to, and hang out with, dude. And they really like him. They believe in him, and they think socialism is something that should happen on a limited scale.
Well, his thing right now is he's pushing out there that democratic socialism is actually what the majority of Americans believe in. They just don't know it,
And, yeah, especially the younger people. Right. I mean, the older people are still like, you should get off your ass and get a job and retire. All that stuff can't happen if the the system's still set up this way. So we can either face the facts that we're completely corrupt and beyond broken and let's try something else, or we can do what he's doing, which is merge into the society that gives the things you need away for free as long as you don't revolt. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but that's generally what's happening right now.
He's kind of the Burning Man of the Democratic Party. Like, we'll sell out we'll sell out a little bit and change shit from the inside,
Yeah, I mean, it's a noble cause, but for me personally, I don't think it works. What I do think is good is the message, and that message will be delivered in the debates, and of course Hillary Clinton's probably going to get 80% of the airtime or whatever, but at least the little bit of time that Bernie Sanders does get in the debates, he'll be able to rail off about corporate greed, and he'll be able to rail off about money and politics and all that stuff. And the country needs to hear all that stuff. Would his policies actually work? I personally highly doubt it, because he kind of runs on a similar platform to many of these previous presidents.
Well, he wouldn't be allowed to implement what he actually wants to do. So it's like, if you were actually able to implement it, it could work. The problem is, when you become president, we've seen this with Obama, is you're now beholden to banks and corporations.
Yeah, man. In principle, the ideas are good, dude. But when it comes down to in practice, it's just more a different version of oligarchy.
Right.
And that's basically the limit of what he's going to be able to do. Will he be able to reform the oligarchy a little bit? Maybe. But, for the most part, the military-industrial complex is so entrenched in the banking system and Wall Street. And, dude, if he actually went in there and started implementing some of these reforms he talked about, there'd be, there'd be some major political changes that would happen, And, I don't know whether we're talking about a complete Republican sweep of the Congress or whatever. Something would happen where all the money would come back and, then take it a step further. You talk about coercion, you talk about blackmail, you talk about threat of violence, you talk about actual violence, assassination attempts.
Yeah,
These are all things that, have happened pretty, recently. They still go on. And
there's a reason Kennedy was killed, and it wasn't because some guy shot five bullets in the period of a second,
Right. I mean, a lot of things are coming out about how that was an insider's job now, and his driver shot him, so... They'll get to anybody. It's not going to matter. But the thing is, they can't kill us all. So if we have a consciousness shift, then what are they going to do? Declare open war on the American people? It looks like they're going to prepare, but that's an insane notion. And it's just basically a feint. They're basically doing this as a psyop. I mean,
yeah, dude,
everything they're doing.
Jade Helm, all this crap is a bluff, dude.
If it went live, it's the end of them. I mean, there's 350 million people here.
Right.
And 100 million of them probably have a gun.
And so that's the whole point, is that it doesn't matter what politician we elect or whatever per se. It's more or less the message that's carried. And more people hear the message, the better off we are, man. And so, you know, there's been a huge revolt within the Democratic ranks against Obama recently on the TPP. I don't know if anyone's been paying attention to that. Even Pelosi, now that it's politically convenient, and now that she knew it wasn't gonna, she knew it was gonna sink, she's like, "Yeah, I'm against it too." You know?
Obama just gave a speech at the Nike headquarters and said, "Just do it" to TPP. Can you believe that, man?
Crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. Insane.
And it's so, and it's foreshadowing too, because the TPP thing. We did a story on this on the Anti-Media last week about how they want to establish trade relations with Malaysia, dude. And Malaysia is an egregious abuser of human rights. They, you know, slave labor, human trafficking, sex slaves. I mean, you name it, Malaysia does it. And the TPP, within the TPP, would make us a huge partner with them, dude. So, you know, we'd be getting a bunch of Malaysian-made, slave-made, child-made goods, more than we already are. I mean, you remember the Hot Wheel cars and stuff made in Malaysia, right, on the bottom.
Unfortunately, I loved those cars.
Yeah, and they were awesome cars. When I was a kid, I loved Hot Wheel cars. But you know what? I always wondered, why does it say made in Malaysia on the bottom? Well, that's because kids that are your age, you know, you're a little kid playing with, you know, toy cars. Another little kid your age is building them over in Malaysia. So, yeah, that's, you know, that's pretty sad. And yeah, so you're starting to see this, you know, pseudo-rebellion against Obama, you know, the ranks. And Jake, I know you voted for Obama in the past.
Twice.
DB, you voted for Obama in the past in 2008, correct?
Yep, 2008 I did, and then I didn't even bother in 12.
Yeah, so, you know, there's been already a pretty big rebellion among the ranks of people that at least they used to identify as Democrats. And now I think more and more of those people are more identifying as, like, independents or progressives or, you know, left-leaning independents, things like that. But I think a Bernie Sanders candidacy is going to build that message. And then, of course, when Marco Rubio ends up winning the whole thing, there's going to be a bunch of pissed off progressives. And that's going to build a movement of its own, just like Ron Paul built a movement of his own on the right when he got the short end, when he got shafted in 2012. Because if you want to look back at the whole Iowa caucuses, you know, and this whole big deal is made out of the Iowa caucuses.
Yeah.
Who won the Iowa caucuses?
Ron Paul
won the Iowa caucuses, but the media is like, oh, Mitt Romney wins Iowa, and, you know, and of course, we all know what happened after that.
The caucuses are the such a charade of representational.
Caucuses are like extreme representation, you know, it's whoever's the most motivated, you know, it doesn't matter the numbers, it's the motivation, and that's why the Ron Paul people won, because they were the most motivated, because they were the hardcore activists, just like the people that support Bernie Sanders are also the hardcore activists. Do I know any, like, first of all, in real life, I don't know any Hillary Clinton supporters. All of my friends that are either, I have plenty of friends that are Democrats, I have plenty of friends that are progressives. They all support Bernie Sanders.
I have.
And they're all, you know, all my activist friends that are, you know, progressives, they're all Bernie Sanders people, and they're going to be hitting the streets for Bernie Sanders.
I have friends that are hardcore Hillary supporters, and I'm going to be fighting them tooth and claw.
And now all of my Republican activist friends are all out there going for Rand Paul, and they're not going for Jeb Bush, and they're not going for Marco Rubio. And so all we're going to see now is that we're going to see what's going to develop is, you know, if we see a Hillary Clinton come forward and then it's Jeb Bush is the front runner, then we're going to know that we're dealing with another manufactured election where the media manufactures this fake consensus where it's like, oh, these are our two candidates. These are who you got to vote for. Well, it's going to be a media manufactured consensus because all the boots on the ground, all the people that are passionate about this stuff, they're either going for Bernie Sanders or Rand Paul or for one of the independents. That's all there is to it. There's nobody out there excited about Jeb Bush. There's hardly anybody out there excited about Hillary Clinton. So, you know, if we see this stuff move forward, it just goes to show that the election, the whole process, it's just a show. It's a facade. I mean, we can go on and on about this, but I want to jump into this next big story, which is about Rachel Dolezal. And we're not going to delve into, oh, is she, Is it okay that she's pretending that she's black? Is it not okay?
No, that's the point of the
article. Let's not dig into that, because that is a, although that is a valid discussion, it is a very, very small discussion that should be isolated to the Spokane, Washington area where she lives, and it should be taken care of by the people that live there that are involved in that organization, and they should say, oh, we don't want someone like that running our organization, or, oh, we don't mind if someone like that runs our organization. That's where the debate should have ended. Instead, it's become this enormous national narrative. The media is covering it. Google News all day today. It was in the top three stories on Google. It's on the front page of Drudge Report. I mean, I can't even name a website that hasn't covered this shit, outside of maybe, you know, the people that we network with and some of the independent media people. But a lot of websites are covering this stuff. And of course, whenever we see this happen, then we say, okay, well, what we're dealing with here is a distraction. You know, what we're dealing with here is something that shouldn't be a national story, but it is. So what is it that we're not, you know, what isn't being talked about now that this is a national story? So the first one I have here is about this guy, Colonel Gulmurad Kalimov. He was a police captain from Tajikistan. Long story short, he was recruited by the U.S. State Department, and he was trained for 11 years by Blackwater to be a counter-terrorist or a whatever. I don't. They're literally training this guy to be a counter-terrorist. If that's not a terrorist, I don't know what is. Anyway,
an insider turn, though. That's a huge story.
Exactly. And so what happened is this guy gets 11 years of training, and I don't even want to speculate how many millions of dollars were dumped into this guy being trained. And then this whole story smells like fish, because he was also being trained by the Russians, too. The Russians trained him on anti-terrorism. The U.S. State Department trained him on anti-terrorism. And now this guy's a colonel for ISIS. He becomes a colonel for ISIS with all this training that he's got. And he's sitting there, and they make this video, and he says he's going to come kill all the American pigs and all this shit. But this kind of just goes to show, I don't know if you want to call it a strategy to deal with ISIS or whatever, because we talked about, and here in this article, and if anybody wants to read this whole article, it's really long and it's got a lot of information. Just Google 10 stories that were missed while everyone was talking about Rachel Dolezal. But, you know, recently, last week, we talked about these documents that were obtained from the Pentagon that showed that they predicted ISIS was going to come about from the U.S. intervention in Syria. And they actually said, we think it's a good thing that ISIS comes about, because then they'll help us destabilize Assad and help us overthrow the government of Syria. So then you read a report like this, and it's like, oh man, this guy, we trained him and then he turned on us. It's like, damn, that sucks. And you know, at face value, you know, that's a horrible story. But then if you think about it even more, and it gets even more ominous, like, man, what if they were training this guy the whole time to do what he's doing? And that's when you start really getting like, oh damn, this is crazy. But to me, it kind of just goes to show this bloated foreign policy where we think we can go around and pick and choose people who we're going to, you know, pick sides with and who we're going to support. I mentioned it a little earlier when we were talking about Hillary Clinton's war in Libya. You know, we went and we bombed out Gaddafi, and we said we were supporting democracy and freedom fighters and stuff. And now in Libya, all you got is a bunch of jihadist warlords going at each other. ISIS has now moved in. We're still over there bombing. I mean, the country's completely gone to shit, and they were once the most prosperous country on the whole continent of Africa. You know, they had the highest standard of living. I mean, those people were making on average like $16,000 a year. That's only slightly lower than what you make in the U.S., and their cost of living was a lot lower. I mean, these people, for their cost of living, they were, you know, had some of the highest standards in the world. Now it's a complete failed state. Now it's completely all chaos and violence and bombing and car bombs and terrorism and who knows what. ISIS is growing up there now. But it just kind of goes to show that we got this huge foreign policy that has no direction. And the only direction that it seems to be going in is creating more and more enemies for us over, you know, over time. So we trained this guy for 11 years. Now he's going to be a huge thorn in our side. Who knows how long it's going to take for us to kill this guy and all the men that he commands and all the tactics that he knows that we taught him and stuff. I mean,
almost has certain characteristics of possibly setting up a patsy for a false flag. I mean, you never know.
Shit, man, you never know nowadays. You know, and that's another article we're working on too, Jake.
Well, with our security military apparatus, anything that happens literally is allowed to happen. I mean, we have Skynet, dude. We have quantum computing. They can pretty much predict things. So if you're seeing something happen like the Dallas guy going and, you know, shooting at the police station, it's allowed to happen, man. They're on it in real time.
Yeah, they you're right, DB. Actually, I wrote an article like a year ago about the Department of Defense actually created a program that the whole point is exactly what you said, is to be able to predict in real time events that are going to happen. It's like a sentient computer that like is tracking all real time information so that it can try and predict what's going to happen. It's pretty disturbing. Like they're basically like actively trying to figure out how to, predict domestic attacks and not stop them.
It's like the Minority Report.
It is. It's already, I mean, everything in Hollywood in a way is its own predictive programming, and I'm sure that system has been up for a long time. From what I read in 2012, they put NORAD into the hands of a quantum computer that had AI, so that if for some reason every person with clearance was killed and we were launched on, we'd still launch away. Like it's automatic now.
God.
Now the other thing to think about too, while we're on this whole topic of that, the stuff in Dallas and all that, there was that recent, I think it was in Texas as well, where they had that Muhammad drawing contest or whatever, and then some dudes got caught up before, you know, they were going to go shoot it up or whatever, and they got caught up. I mean, that kind of stuff, it's like, how did they know that those guys were going to go shoot up that place? Well, you know, most of the time we're talking, especially with domestic terrorism, you're talking about the FBI setting up these, you know, manufacturing these terror threats and, you know, giving these guys these plans, giving these guys the locations, giving the guy the weapons and the bombs and, you know, all the ammo and everything needed to go pull off these attacks. And a lot of the time,
they'll drive
them
to
these,
the place.
Yeah, they're like impressionable young men, and, you know, you get them while they're angry and they trick them into doing these things. And then they're able to swoop in right before it happens. Oh, look, we're heroes, guys. We stopped the terrorists and stuff. 99% of the terror attacks that are planned in the U.S., one way or another, they're kind of manufactured by the FBI. Even
Absolutely.
Over there, even
yeah.
the Boston bombing, you know, the guys that perpetrated the Boston bombing supposedly were detained and questioned by the FBI previously, and the Russians told us that they were a threat. And, you know, it's like, come on, dude, like, are you really gonna let this go on and on and on? And sometimes you wonder, it's like, well, do they want to? Sometimes that maybe they're not false flags, but maybe they just say, okay, we're gonna let something happen, you know, just to put a little scare back into these Americans that think they're walking around post 9/11 thinking they get away with whatever they want.
Well, they rig the system so that it's inevitable that people are gonna come out and do these things, and they can spin them into the larger global narrative in whatever ways they need to.
So let's move on to the next story here, and let's see if we can not jump too much here. All right, let's just go to the second story here. I'm going to go in order on this article. If anyone wants to follow with us on the site, feel free. So the second story here is about what recently happened in Mexico. Mexico just had their midterm elections. And we've talked about this pretty extensively on the show, but Mexico is going through a very difficult period of civil unrest, and rightfully so. I mean, their government is completely corrupt. It's completely in bed with the narco traffic, the drug trafficking cartels. I mean, to the point now where even the Mexican activists here that I know in San Diego, they call them narco gobierno, narco government. They don't even call it the government or the narc or the cartel. They consider it one entity now, because they're so in bed together. But anyway, you got a bunch of this unrest going on in Mexico, and much of it is going on down in the indigenous areas, of course, where the people are massively oppressed and taken advantage of. But these guys boycotted the elections. The biggest teacher union in the country, dude, the teacher union down there in Mexico, they're becoming the revolutionaries. They blocked the ballots. They took over the ballot station, the polling stations. They were burning ballots in the streets. I mean, it's some pretty serious stuff. The government, of course, tried to downplay it. Oh, it's only isolated events, even though there's whole states going up in flames. And we got some footage from Mexico just, you know, in the days leading up to the election. And the thing that really frightened me, man, is you're seeing truckloads and truckloads of military equipment getting trucked into these cities and these towns to go and clamp down on any predicted unrest. And you're sitting there looking at these tanks and these trucks, and then you say, oh, those are Humvees. You say, oh, those are American-made tanks. And then you start to realize, oh, shit, we're basically giving all these weapons to the Mexican government for them to go kill their own people. And at the same time, we're bombing countries in Libya, like Libya, saying we're helping their people, and, you know, we're supporting the Israelis as they bomb the Palestinians, and, you know, we're supporting the rebels over in Syria, and, you know, we're funding the Iraqi government. You know, at the same time, we're doing all this stuff because we say we're fighting for freedom, and we're helping people, and we're helping people by bombing them and stuff. But, you know, what about Mexico? Why are we giving $3 billion in military aid a year to Mexico to supposedly fight the drug war when, you know, I saw the footage myself. They're trucking these tanks into these cities to clamp down on protesters. You know what I mean? And we're supporting that stuff. So that's just crazy, man. And then you also got the agricultural workers trying to fight for $2 an hour down there, and they can't even make that. And it's American companies that are down there exploiting this very cheap labor, paying these guys, you know, $8 a day to farm out in the fields all day and stuff, giving them shitty conditions, no bathrooms, no shelter. And these guys they try to fight for $2 an hour. They send the cops in there and shoot them up and beat them up. Put them back to work. And, you know, these are American companies that are down there, you know, the agricultural companies that are exploiting that labor, sending this produce up to us, you know, overcharging the shit out of us for it.
Sickening.
And then paying their people like nothing to make it. And so, yeah, that's also going on. That's part of the reason. And then the other big thing down in Mexico, the main reason apparently why this boycott was taking place of the elections was that, you know, the 43 students that have still been unaccounted for, the 43 students that were kidnapped by the police down in Ayotzinapa, down in the state of Guerrero, down in Mexico. The cops literally kidnapped 43 students, handed them over to the drug cartel, and for all we know, for execution. We're not sure if they're dead or not yet, but for all we know, that's what happened. And
these are students that are, you know, actively protesting. And
they were students that were protesting. And, you know, and once again, we're supporting that government, dude, with our dollars and our everything.
There seems to be a large-scale overall effort to clamp down on dissent of any kind, you know.
All over the world, because I don't know if it's now, if it's just more prevalent. I don't know if it's because now we're in a place where the world is just completely fucked up. Or if it's just that the technology is allowing people to get video of this stuff online and we're actually hearing about it. Maybe this stuff's been happening all the time. We just never heard about it. But now that with the technology, now with the video, the internet, we're able to see it and it's able to mobilize more and more people, man. Mexico is in a state of, they're constantly on the verge of revolution. And we mentioned this last couple shows, the whole Jade Helm thing. Anyone not familiar with Jade Helm, don't do a Google search on it because all you're going to find is a bunch of conspiracy theories. But I mean, I don't want to discount any of those. But check us on the anti-media. We have an article about it that kind of just gets down to the nitty gritty of it. But you know, me and DB have speculated on this Jade Helm thing because it's a massive military exercise going on in the Southwest United States. But we've talked about how that it may be preparations for expected spillover from this, you know, Mexican Civil War that seems to be, you know, could happen at any time. You know, it could pop off at any time. And so I think our government is going to try to militarize the border and try to hold it in because it's going to have a lot of spillover. Now the problem is that we're partially responsible for any civil war going on down there. For one, you got the drug war, man, and the drug war has basically exacerbated a lot of the problems down in Mexico. The poverty, the violence, the murder, the state of freedom of the press. It's a lot of that comes from the drug war and all the negative repercussions that come from that. The economic depression that they've been stuck in for a long time. I mean, Mexico never fully recovered from those years of hyperinflation that they went through a couple decades ago, and they've been struggling ever since. You know, ever since the drug war came into play, the 70s, the 80s. You know, these guys went through constant economic turmoil, and they're still going through it today. And so. You got that, you got the fact that we're propping up that corrupt government, and then you got NAFTA, and as I mentioned with the farm workers, you got a bunch of American exploitation of the poor and the indigenous down in Mexico for labor and all that. So, you know, the U.S. is going to try to contain any big conflict that goes on in Mexico. They're going to try to keep it contained, but we can't help but admit that we're at least partially responsible for any unrest that goes on in Mexico because of our own policies. And so that's just, you know, something to keep in mind. Moving forward, keep an eye on Mexico. Like I said, it could pop off at any time, and so just keep an eye out for that. Especially if you're in the border regions, you could see some, you know, crazy, you know, militarization. I mean, here in Mexico, we've got to be one of the most militarized cities. I mean, I know for sure on the West Coast, we're one of the most militarized cities in the country. Mm-hmm. The other day, these two helicopters flew about 300 yards over top of my house, and these are the biggest helicopters that the Navy has, and it shook the whole place. Two of them flew over, and it was really close to the thing, and I'm like, oh man, is that part of J-Helm? I don't know. But yeah, I just keep that in mind. If you're in the border zones, you're gonna, and then something pops off down in Mexico, there's gonna be a big time militarization of the border. That's not something that's going to be pleasant for the people living down this way. Third story that people probably missed while they were talking about Rachel Dolezal. We all remember the 2008 financial crisis, 2008, 2009. Started off here in the U.S. with the housing crisis and the subprime mortgage crisis and all that crap, whatever. It set off a chain of events that went worldwide, turned into a worldwide global financial, you know, crisis, recession, depression. Europe, you know, still to this day is still struggling through basically European-wide recession, except for Iceland. And Iceland is one of the few countries, yeah, it's a small country, but they're one of the few that actually decided, hey, we're not going to bail out these banks that screwed us over. We're actually going to hold them accountable. We're not going to bail them out. We're not going to take the foreign bailouts. We're going to throw these guys in jail. We're not going to pay back all these horrible loans. This is what Iceland did, and this is what they decided as a country. And this was never talked about in the media. The media never mentioned it. And this was actually the first story I saw about Iceland come from a semi-mainstream source ever since the financial crisis happened. Because of what Iceland did, they became blackballed in the media. They didn't want anyone else getting ideas. Oh, we don't want anyone realizing what Iceland did. They actually jailed these guys. But coincidentally, maybe not so coincidentally, they're actually now one of the top performing economies in all of Europe, and they're on pace to become the first country in all of Europe that was affected by the financial crisis to surpass its pre-crisis economic output. So their economy is basically fully rebounded, and the rest of Europe is basically still kind of stuck in this debt-laden kind of central banking style economy. And Iceland said, screw that, and we should look at that as an example here in the U.S. and anywhere with, you know, any bigger countries, whether we're talking about Western Europe, Southeast Asia, here in the U.S., anywhere that's got a central bank or is under influence of central banks, you know, should keep look at Iceland as an example of what can be done if we don't allow these bankers to control us and take much more of an independent stance on how our economy should be going. Now, of course, with the TPP, thankfully, that's looking like it's in the shredder. Now, let's not count our whatever it's called yet, but they could still resurrect the TPP. But for now, it looks like it's pretty much stalled out. You know, it may come back under a different name. Who knows? But keep in mind that this is a years-long process. They've been working on the TPP for like 5 years now. And a lot of people have spent a lot of money. And it's pretty patently obvious if you look at the Republicans. And you look how the Republicans are like the main ones pushing for this, the fast track of the TPP. It's pretty hilarious because basically the authority that they want to give Obama is the same authority that he did with Obamacare. It's like, oh, it's bad. We don't want to let Obama dictate our healthcare to us, but we do want to let Obama dictate our entire economy. And so like you see the Republicans supporting this, and then you just got to understand, okay, well, the reason the Republicans are supporting this is because somebody's been bankrolling these Republicans to continue to vote for this TPP, to support this TPP. And now who does this TPP thing, you know, help? Well, it helps the biggest companies in the world. That's basically it. It helps the multinationals, right? And basically all the indigenous populations, even here in the US, the people that live here, all the average workers everywhere that are part of this deal, going to get the short end of the stick, and these corporations are going to become, you know, borderless, you know. And here's the thing that sucks too. You know, these corporations are like, yeah, we're going to turn this into a borderless marketplace. But at the same time, the people are held into the borders.
Right.
So we're talking about the free flow of goods and services, supposedly. But at the same time, you can't even let people flow. You can't even let people cross the border. That's a bad thing. And so, you know, what we're looking at now with this TPP is like they're putting corporate trade over the top of humanitarian causes. You know, we're not going to allow refugees from Central America to come to the United States, even though we've overthrown their governments 15 times and continue the drug war down there, and it's ruined their economy. We're not gonna, we're gonna bitch and fight about any refugees that come up from Guatemala or from Mexico. But hey, if we want to send our corporations like Walmart down there, hey, no big deal. You know, the corporations don't have borders. You know, and this is really what's going on. And the Republicans, it's coming. It really is hypocritical coming from the Republicans that are very much protectionists when it comes to humans. They don't want anybody crossing the border. And then they don't want the president having all this power. He's a dictator. Obama's a dictator. I mean, this is the kind of shit these Republicans say. And then they want to go ahead and vote for TPP and give Obama all the authority to negotiate the country's trade with, you know, two-thirds of the populated world.
It's going to be terrible for environmental rights as well. It'll basically, you know, corporations will basically be above the legal system in many respects.
Yeah, man. That's why I'm so happy that this thing stalled out. Now we're gonna stay on top of it. If there's any more updates on it, we're gonna keep on top of it because they're gonna try something.
I didn't know it had stalled out.
It stalled out.
Do Hillary and Jeb both support it?
Did you kind of hear about what made a lot of these politicians not want to sign it, even though they were probably really pressured to?
What?
What was that?
They were gonna be subjected to it as well, including international tribunals. So were they to go against anything these megalithical corporations wanted to do for any reason, and a country decided that they were hurting their profitability, they could actually take them to international court for passing legislation for America.
Wow, the corporations outreach themselves.
Yeah, and it's very, you know, this is political suicide too, for governments that are, you know, economic, you know, the kind of governments that have protectionist economies and stuff, like the U.S., like Mexico. For the politicians, this is really political suicide because what you're doing is you're voluntarily cutting out the middleman, and you got to keep in mind the governments are the middleman between the corporations and the indigenous people, right? And so the government normally maintains the power to say, oh, we're going to allow this or we're not going to allow this. And we're going to let you do this as long as we tax the shit out of you. You could go ahead and sell tobacco as long as you pay us 50%. But what the TPP was trying to do is, like, it was basically the corporation saying, okay, let's go ahead and just cut out this middleman. No longer are we going to have to be subjected to these stupid-ass politicians. Now we just have these corporate tribunals made up of our own lobbyists and our own lawyers, and they get to decide the laws and what we get to do. So, yeah, it really does make a two different tiered system. It's like there's one set of laws that the people need to follow by, and then there's another whole set of laws that the corporations need to follow, and that's what the TPP did.
And it really has no teeth. If somebody would just enforce the antitrust laws and get rid of these monopoly corporations, because then whatever they decide to do, who cares? I'll find somebody that won't do that. And now that's the biggest problem. You have a company like Comcast trying to merge with Time Warner. Now you have one cable company. Now there's no options, and that's a monopoly. So if we can break these things up, they have no teeth.
Exactly, man. Exactly. And so, yeah, it's a good thing it's stalled out. We're out of time almost here. I didn't realize how quickly we were rolling, or how fast time was flying here. We had two callers on the line, but unfortunately I didn't get to them. If you guys are still listening, feel free to call back and we'll take your calls right now. 718-717-8296. Once again, it's 718-717-8296 to reach us here at the Anti-Media Radio. I'm gonna run through the rest of these stories here pretty quickly, and probably won't even be able to get to all of them. As of this month, American cops have already gunned down 500 people, and that's a horrible stat. We pulled this stat from The Counted, which is a Guardian, a function from theguardian.com. It's a UK newspaper. They're counting up a lot of this stuff. They're the same people that Snowden leaked his documents to, and Glenn Greenwald is working for them. He doesn't anymore. But The Guardian is overall a pretty decent news outlet. They are, when it comes to UK politics and stuff, they're just like MSNBC is, right, for the US, you know. But when it comes to world affairs here, for, you know, when it comes to covering the police state, covering the U.S. foreign policy, they're pretty good. So yeah, that's on there. 500 people already gunned down by the cops so far this year. And I mean, you know, in a lot of these countries, in Iceland, in the entire history of Iceland, in their current government, their cops have only killed one person.
I'm gonna have to move to Iceland, dude.
And when that happened, when that cop killed someone, it was like a national mourning, and like they literally like everyone like took off work, and everyone was like sad for the guy that got killed by the cops. But here in the U.S., it's pretty much like no, it's every day. They gun down a lot of people every day, and so you know, five people a day or whatever. It's just kind of become a fact of life here. Of course, we need to keep working to get it reformed. And the main thing is we can't fall for any of these federal reforms. And you know, they've been throwing around this talk of Obama wanting to federalize all the police and stuff. I don't think that it's that true, but I don't doubt that that's something that they would try to push through under a pseudo reform, acting like they're going to fix something when in reality it'd probably just make it a lot worse. So the next story here is some researchers in Europe did a study and they found a connection between prescription painkillers and a 92% increased risk for committing homicide.
Oh man.
So that's pretty scary. And
I was working on an article about that.
There's a bunch of opiate abuse going on right now. Was it 80%? 80% of new heroin addicts are getting getting hooked by first using legal opiates, like Vicodin, right?
Vicodin, Percocet, Oxycontin.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of these.
Not that I know them.
Yeah, not that we've ever tried these things, but 80% of new addicts to heroin are starting out on these legal drugs, and so those are included in with these stats. So that's something to be careful of. I know my personal experience when I used to have, when I was a kid, when I had health insurance from my mom, I would go to the doctor every now and then when I would be complaining about something, and one time my neck was hurting, and you know, the doctor didn't even like touch my neck. He didn't even inspect my spine or anything. He didn't give me an x-ray or anything, even though I had gotten jumped by a bunch of dudes, and like they didn't give me an x-ray or nothing. The guy just comes in and I say, hey, my neck's hurt. He's like, okay. 5 minutes later, he writes me a prescription for Vicodin and I'm out the door. And
same
that was
thing.
It.
Same thing, you know? Happened to me like 2 years ago, man.
Exactly. And this is what these doctors are, this is how they practice now. It's basically in a big way, in a large part, you know, this is what the doctors do now. And that's not the right way to practice medicine, man. And so later on, like this neck problem of mine never went away. So eventually, like after I couldn't deal with it anymore, I went to a chiropractor. And I was like, dude, I told the guy, I'm like, you got to give me an x-ray, man. I know there's something wrong with my neck. And eventually I finally got an x-ray. And sure enough, there was something wrong with my neck. And the chiropractor was able to teach me some stuff to help, you know, reduce the pain. And over time I could correct it. But this is something that my doctor, you know, my main, what do they call it? A primary care doctor. This is the kind of shit they're supposed to be catching. Yeah. They're not supposed to be giving, you know, 15-year-old kids prescription for a shitload of Vicodin.
Yeah,
you know, and just send them walking on their way, and I didn't even get to use the Vicodin. My stepdad jacked me for the pills anyway, so it was like I didn't even get them. But this is pretty scary, dude. Considering that, like, doctors, you know, anyone complaining of any kind of pain and shit, they just throw them on these pain meds, and then you got a 92% increased chance of homicide. You know, that may or may not be one of the reasons why America is such a violent place. America, England, these are two of the most over-medicated populations. They're also two of the most highest murder rates in the Western world. Coincidence? I don't know.
I promise I'm at no risk of homicide, but I've had personal experience with the painkiller problem, and
let's not confuse this study as like everyone that's on pain meds is going to go kill people. It's a 92% chance increase in homicide, which is a very small percentage of the people that end up taking the pills. You don't got to sit there and say, oh, my brother's on, no shit, he's going to kill me in my sleep. No, your brother's probably not going to kill you in your sleep. But the main thing I got from this study is that, dude, we need to start putting this prescription pill money Ponzi scheme into check, because otherwise we're going to be running around with 80% of the population on pain meds and a bunch of people killing people all over the place. Now, we've already tied, you know, there's already been plenty of people that have tied in the fact that a lot of these mass shootings, you know, a lot of these kids are on these psychoactive drugs, or what do they call them?
Psychiatric.
They're on these psych meds and all this stuff, and you know, people have long, you know, wondered whether that had anything to do with an increased rate of homicide and stuff. And if painkillers are doing it, there's probably a good chance that the other pills are doing it too. Although I don't think those studies have been, you know, conducted yet. I wouldn't be surprised when they do come out and they, you know, those findings are made public. On to the next story. Let's see here. This woman, Shona Banda, we touched on this a little bit last show. She was facing 30 years in prison because she uses cannabis oil to treat Crohn's disease in Kansas. And apparently in Kansas, that's a big time crime. Her son was in class and the DARE, which is, what is it? What does DARE stand for again? Drug. And whatever.
Bullshit.
It's
bullshit.
Stupid anyway, yeah. They come into this kid's class and like, you smoke marijuana, you're done. You know, you're gonna, you know, your life's gonna be ruined and blah. Well, in a way they're right. They did ruin this kid's life because when he did speak out in school, he said, no, that's bullshit. My mom takes cannabis oil and she's healthy now because she was really sick. And so the school was like, oh, this kid's mom uses cannabis? Yeah. Let's go ahead and report that to the authorities. They go they go to the woman's house. They raid her home. They find out that she has like a pound of marijuana and she's got cannabis oil, this, that, and the
God forbid she's using cannabis instead of painkillers.
For real, man, because you know what? I'd rather have her on painkillers that make her homicidal than have her on this harmless plant, you know? And so the thing that's really twisted about this thing is that they took the CPS took the kid away, and she was initially going to face 30 years in prison. Now, she got sentenced last week. Guess how long? 17 years in prison.
That's sick.
Because she was using natural medicine to treat a very severe disease. And so, yeah, this is crazy. The kid's life is, you know, now he's not going to have a mom. The woman's life is obviously ruined. I don't know if the father is around to take care of the kid or not. Or the family, but, you know, this is just a horrible story and just goes to show, you know, how egregious the drug war is and how it can affect, you know, just innocent people that are just minding their own business, that are just trying to feel better about, you know, their sickness, or even if they're just using it recreationally, who in the hell is to tell us that we can't? We can go buy a beer down the street. Smoking a joint is no worse than drinking a beer. In fact, I'd argue that it's less worse or harmless compared to beer. If you get drunk and drive, yeah, you can kill somebody. So yeah, this just goes to show how horribly failed the drug war is. And we touched on all the foreign policy aspects and what it's done to Mexico and Central America, South America, Colombia, Peru, all these countries getting the wrath of the drug war and stuff. And so yeah, that's another crazy story. Number seven, I'm just going to go quickly through this. It's about the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which was passed under George Bush. In response to, I think it was Enron. But anyway, it's being broadly interpreted now, creatively interpreted, to where they're starting to use this law against individuals who they suspect of crime, and if you delete your browser history of your computer, you can get 20 years in prison for that. You want to look into that, search it on the anti-media. We got a whole in-depth story on that. Once again, back to Saudi Arabia. A journalist is facing 1,000 lashes for speaking out against the government. He's accused of apostasy. And, you know, once again, it's one of these countries that we support with military aid, and they're our allies, but they give journalists 1,000 lashes for speaking out against the government. The guy got his first 50 lashes a while back, and he's scheduled to get his next 50 in the coming weeks. The first time he got his 50 lashes almost killed the guy. So most people don't even expect him to live through it. So yeah, he's going to be executed for journalism, basically. Back to the DOD, they lost track of $8.5 trillion with a T. I don't know how that's even possible. But since 1996, the Department of Defense and, yeah, the DOD lost track of $8.5 trillion.
Since 1945, they're at $51 trillion missing.
Wow, dude, that's
insane. That's a lot of black ops.
And you got this kid in Rikers Isle, was basically thrown in jail. He was never convicted. He was in jail for 3 years. Two of those years were in solitary confinement. He got out and he took his own life. Horrible story. There's another story about it. We're covering it tomorrow as well. Keep an eye on us. Same place, same time tomorrow. I'ma
let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.